the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, not far from the moon. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a multi-part program with Stephen Quayle. First of all, it'll be a terror update with Stephen. We've got some things to talk about. And then later on in the program, giants of the Solomon Islands. And are there UFO bases there right now? We'll talk with Stephen Quayle about that on tonight's Coast to Coast program. First of all, send all your energy, your heat energy to everybody up there on the northeast part of the United States. It is brutal out there. It is cold. As a matter of fact, Mount Washington, New Hampshire, right now, minus 69 degrees wind chill. Minus 69 degrees wind chill. You go outside, your nose will fall off. It's that cold. So, you know what? Concentrate some energy up that way and warm that place, because it's going to be that way for the rest of the week. As a matter of fact, this is so strange. And what could be what political watchers are calling possibly the biggest blunder in years? Former Vice President Al Gore is set to give a speech tomorrow on the perils of global warming, and he's going to be saying this in New England, where we've got record cold, record wind chills, and he's going to be talking about global warming tomorrow. I don't know. I think he should cancel his speech. Meanwhile, all systems go for the robotic rover to take the first drive on the surface of Mars. This is getting exciting. And conduct an experiment with a European space probe circling the planet. The rover Spirit is set to roll off the lander at about midnight Pacific time. So it's not too far, in just a few hours, or 3 a.m. Eastern time. In almost a 10-foot jaunt that would take about 78 seconds. All of the activities were completed perfectly, and all of the subsystems are performing nominally, they say. So all is well. There's nothing left to do on the lander Spirit. We're just going to wait. When it reaches the ground, the Spirit will pause to point its mini thermal emissions spectrometer up to the sky at the same time that the European orbiter, Mars Express, snaps the same type of images from about 186 miles that the rover will do, and then they're going to be able to just combine them. So it's going to be the first test, and then rover starts to do what it's supposed to do. It's going to start looking for things on the planet. And as we've been reporting all week, and last week, President Bush has announced an ambitious plan to send astronauts back to the moon to create a permanent lunar colony and finally make the first manned mission to Mars. He says it's time for America to take the next step. Bush said that at NASA's headquarters in Washington, D.C., saying, "We will begin the effort quickly. We'll make steady progress, one mission, one voyage, one landing at a time." Under the plan, the United States would withdraw from the International Space Station by 2010, and the aging space shuttle fleet would be retired at about the same time. The shuttle now costs NASA about $4 billion a year, and the station about $1 billion. In the shuttle's place, Bush called for the development of a new crew exploratory vehicle capable of carrying astronauts to the space station and the moon. The plan also calls for astronauts to go to Mars by 2030. The president asked for an increase of less than 5% a year to NASA's budget, which is about $800 million per year over the next 3 years. A man landing on the moon is estimated to cost about $50 billion. So about $800 million per year over the next 3 years is what they're going to be looking for to add to NASA's budget. In a moment, my guest will be Robert Zubrin, Mars Society. He's got a novel idea called Mars Direct, a plan for affordable manned Mars missions. And then later on this hour, Richard C. Hoagland, he will join us to get his reaction on President Bush's announcement to go back to Mars and to go to Mars and then to go back to the moon. More than 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate, and that's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, even a diminished sex drive, Super Prostate Formula is for you. Designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Teplisky, Super Prostate Formula combines nutrients that support the health of your prostate so you can reclaim control. by joining legions of listeners who have had incredible results, this works, and by ordering two bottles of Dr. Teplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you will also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula. That's a natural alternative to Viagra to support your own sexual vitality. Plus, you'll get a groundbreaking book, The Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and a newsletter, $100 value, free as a gift. Guaranteed to work, or you get your money back. And if you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund. Keep the two bottles of the Super Libido Formula, the book, and the newsletter, free as a gift. Not available in stores. So call now, 1-800-603-7277. That's 1-800-603-7277. 1-800-603-7277.
Dr. Talbot and I don't blame you for refusing to make another New Year's resolution to lose weight. You've been let down by so many diets, you've lost count. Then came the diet pills that made you feel jittery, sleepless, and always hungry. And in the end, you didn't lose the weight or you put it right back on. I'm Dr. Greg Cinnamone, and I understand how it feels. I've been through those wars, and that's why I implore you. If you have one more try left in you, make it CortiSlim. CBS News did a glowing piece on CortiSlim, the new science in weight loss. Oprah, Woman's Day, and Shape each concluded diet and exercise are great, but until you control your cortisol, that hormone found to keep us overweight, those pounds will stay put. If you've ever looked in the mirror and thought, I exercise, I watch what I eat, I still look like this, you have to try non-prescription CortiSlim. Call and tell us how much weight you want to lose and how fast you want to lose it. If your goal is reasonable, we'll guarantee results or your money back. Call 1-800-975-LEAN. 800-975-LEAN. 800-975-LEAN.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone. And
that was, of course, John F. Kennedy. A long, long time ago. Robert Zubrin holds master's degrees in aeronautics and astronautics and a doctorate in nuclear engineering. He is the inventor of several unique concepts for space propulsion and exploration. He has authored more than 100 published technical and non-technical papers in the field, as well as written several books. As an engineer at Lockheed Martin, he co-developed the Mars Direct Plan for affordable manned Mars missions. Robert is now president of his own space R&D company called Pioneer Astronautics, and he is also a fellow of the British Interplanetary Society. Most recently, he founded the Mars Society, an international organization dedicated to furthering the exploration and the settlement of Mars by both public and private means. Prior to his work in astronautics, Dr. Zubrin was employed in areas of thermonuclear fusion research, nuclear engineering, radiation protection, and was a high school science teacher. Tonight, this hour, Robert Zubrin. Hello, Robert. I guess this is pretty exciting that we are going to go to Mars, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a significant step forward. You know, we've been marooned in Earth orbit now for 30 years due to lack of any real presidential leadership. And now we finally got the ship pointed out of the bay and we're heading out.
Robert, 2030, I would think that we could get there much sooner, don't you?
Certainly could. If I have a complaint about the Bush program, I would say it's just too slow. You know, to the moon by 2020, Mars by 2030. I mean, that's going back to the moon in 16 years. It only took 8 the first time, and, you know, that was the America of slide rules and rotary telephones. We should be able to do it in less time than they did.
Why have they made it such a longer time period, both for the moon and for Mars?
Well, he doesn't want to increase the NASA budget, so he's waiting until he can phase out the shuttle in order to move that budget over to support the moon program.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, but even so, we could go a lot faster. What we ought to do here, you see, is not first build a moon base, and then when we're done with that, start working on a Mars mission. That's the slow way to go, and that runs the risk of getting basically marooned on the moon. We don't want that, okay? What you want to do is you design a set of hardware that can do Mars, a subset of which can do the moon. And then you start flying, and you do your missions to Earth orbit and then to the moon first, and then you go on to Mars. In other words, it's like a flight test program.
Sure.
With an airplane. You start doing little things and then more ambitious flights and so forth as you exercise the flight envelope. And if we do that, really what we could do if we actually got started right now is we could be on the moon in 5 years and on Mars at 10. We don't need to take 30 years to get to Mars.
Robert, the technology to get us to the moon, I assume, will be so different than what we used 35, 36, 40 years ago.
Well, actually, no. You don't need advanced propulsion to go to the moon, and nor does it actually do you very much good to use advanced propulsion to go to the moon. One thing that we will do on the moon differently, I'm pretty sure, is we will start making return propellant on the moon. We can make oxygen out of lunar rocks. Rocks are more than half oxygen by weight. And if you do that, rocket fuel is generally at least three-quarters oxygen by weight, so we can make most of our return propellant on the moon. And that of course, would be something very different than Apollo. And we'll land much larger habitations on the moon, and we'll have the capability initially staying there 2 weeks at a time, which is to say a full lunar day. And then as soon as we have nuclear reactors, we'll be able to stay there as long as we want.
Is it even necessary to go to the moon if we want to go directly to Mars?
No, it isn't. We don't need to go to the moon to go to Mars. One thing that the president said today that was really not correct was that we would take off from the moon to go to Mars. Even though it's much weaker gravity on the moon than Earth, and therefore it would be easier to go from the moon to Mars than from Earth to Mars, before you get the ship to the moon, you have to fly it to the moon and lift it out of Earth's gravity well that way. And so there really is no advantage to doing that. The moon is not as worthwhile an objective as Mars. There's much more interesting science on Mars. Mars is the key to letting us know the nature of life and its position and plentitude in the universe. The moon has some utility. We could use it as a platform for astronomical observatories, for example, but it's a secondary objective. So you really don't want to develop an entire set of separate hardware to do the moon. Once again, we want to do this with common hardware. If we do this with common hardware, that is the same hardware could do the moon and Mars, we can do both objectives. We'll save half the money, and we'll do it in half the time.
Now, your program, of course, Mars Direct, do you think they're going to look seriously at your plan to get to Mars on a little more affordable basis?
Well, I think they will sooner or later. Right now, this initiative has been drawn up by a very small group at NASA headquarters and inside the White House. And it actually does not represent the highest power of technical talent in NASA, let alone the nation. I think one thing that would be wonderful is if they open this process up and really mobilize the genius of the American technological community into this initiative. You know, I think what they ought to do is compete the design of the mission plan for this program. That is, throw it open. Open to bids from the NASA field centers, the national labs, the aerospace companies, the nonprofits, the universities. Let's see what plan everyone has and have some kind of blue ribbon panel and choose the best. Why settle for the first plan we see?
Robert, give us an overview of the Mars Direct program, how it would work, your plan.
Okay. Well, Mars Direct is the Mars mission plan that I designed at the Martin Company, along with some other engineers, notably David Baker was a key collaborator of mine on that. The way it works is this. You do the Mars mission with two launches of a heavy lift booster. The first shoots to Mars an Earth return vehicle with no one in it. And that flies out to Mars, take 8 months to get there. You land on Mars, it's unmanned, and it's unfueled. except that you bring around 6 tons of liquid hydrogen with you to Mars. And after you land, you react that hydrogen with the Martian atmosphere, which is basically carbon dioxide gas, to produce a large supply of methane and oxygen rocket propellant. So now you got a fully fueled Earth return vehicle sitting, waiting on the surface of Mars. Once that is done, then you launch the crew out to Mars. And because their return ride is waiting for them on the surface of Mars, they don't need to fly to Mars in some, you know, gigantic, futuristic Battlestar Galactica spaceship. They can fly to Mars in a basic habitation module, like a big tuna can with a life support system in it. They fly out to Mars in that. They take 6 months to get to Mars. They land near the Earth return vehicle. They use their habitation module that they flew to Mars in as their house while they're on Mars. And at the end of a year and a half of exploration of Mars, they get in the Earth return vehicle and fly home. They leave the habitat behind on Mars. So each time you do this, you add another habitat to the base. And before you know it, we've begun the first human settlement on a new world.
Now, you said year and a half. Do you think we're going to stay that long on our first trip?
Yeah, you need to. Because the planets are always moving around, and Earth and Mars move at different rates, and you have to be there a year and a half for the planets to swing around to give you a launch window that'll take you back home.
My God, Robert, I thought maybe they'd be there for a week and they'd get back in their ship and on their way home again.
Mm-mm. No, you can't do that, and actually it wouldn't make much sense to do that. I mean, if you're going to take 6 months to go there and 6 months to come back, it hardly makes sense to just spend a week in any case. That'd be like planning your Hawaiian vacation by spending, you know, 9 days traveling around airports and, you know, half an hour at the beach.
You know, the astronauts who will be picked for this mission, of course, you know, we're talking about 20-some years from now. I guess they really aren't even around yet. They can't select astronauts for that trip.
Well, not at this point, not if they go at this slow schedule. Of course, if we do what we could do, which is, you know, really gear up and do it, then the astronauts, we'd be there in 10 years, and the people that would go to Mars are probably people who are in the astronaut corps today.
That's true. Now, what would change, Robert? What would change to get us to speed up this entire program?
Really, if the American people make it clear to the political class that we want a space program that really goes somewhere. You know, that, you know, 3 decades of stagnation is enough. I mean, when you think about it, you know, the Bush plan has us getting back to the moon in 2020. That's 50 years after we landed there in the first place. That's choosing as a national goal repeating what was done half a century before. It's like somebody trying to pose as a great aviation hero by flying the Atlantic in 1977, 50 years after Lindbergh.
Well, that's true.
All right, you know. You know, you played that tape of Kennedy, "We choose to go to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it is hard." He was willing to take on new goals, things that people had never done before. You know, this is America. We can do anything. And so really, you know, what we have right now is really a rather timid plan that, you know, people have adopted, which is, well, you know, we'll start out by repeating what we've already done, and then we'll think about going beyond that. You know, I mean, it's greatly to be preferred to what we have been doing, which is just hanging out in Earth orbit 300 miles up, you know, at least back to the moon. The moon is someplace, and it will perhaps restore NASA's confidence and enable it to push out further. So I'm all for it. But I think we need to do better, and I think we are going to get do better. I think once this program gets going, you know, we'll start developing a hardcore of people who are running this program who know what they're doing, and they will start becoming more aggressive. And I think we're going to break out of this. I think we're going to beat that schedule that Bush named today by quite a bit.
An AP poll shows that most of the American public, about 55%, prefers that the money be spent here on domestic issues for schools, health, fixing cities, as opposed to going to the Mars. Do you think that might have been one of the reasons why that the date is so extended?
No, not in particular. I think it's just the way he's figuring on funding this is just shifting the shuttle budget over into this initiative, in which case we can basically do this program with a flat NASA budget. And, you know, that makes a certain amount of sense, and it completely refutes all these people who are screaming, oh, it's going to cost $1 trillion, oh, where are we going to find the money? We're just going to have a space program that costs about the same as what it has cost, but it's going to accomplish much greater things. So it is a very positive thing.
Well, there's no question that this initiative is a long time coming. Don't you think they need to solve some other problems, though, immediately? And that includes, of course, what they're going to do with the space shuttle. And the other thing is what I'm reading, that we are going to withdraw from the International Space Station by 2010. What does that mean? Because we would have put in a lot of the money.
Well, look, you know, we're in the space station now. We've been in that space station. We've had people in that space station since, what, about 1999? So you've got people in the space station for 11 years. You know, the space station is a spaceship that doesn't go anywhere. You know, the reason why we go into space is not to just go hang out in space. It's to go across space and explore new worlds. So if you're going to do this with a flat budget, you got to choose which you'd rather do. Hang out 300 miles above the Earth or actually go someplace.
Robert, do you think we should, instead of go at it alone, bring in all the nations that are capable of working and helping us?
Well, you know, of course, President Bush has invited the rest of the world to come and join us on this. And we're starting to see Mars Society chapters have put out calls in Australia and in Europe right now for their nations to come and join this initiative. And I think that a lot of people are going to want to join it. And I think this is going to be a good way to maybe pull the Western world back together again, which has been somewhat fractured over this recent period.
All right, Robert, thank you. I'm going to bring in Richard C. Hoagland next, but I tell you what, maybe sometime next week we can do a full show with you and Richard as we talk about this entire issue of going back to the moon and then on the Mars.
All right, just one thing. You know, if people want to help make this happen, they should join the Mars Society. We've got a website at marssociety.org. They can go there. They can find out what's going on. They can join. They can come to our international conference in Chicago this August. And, you know, because this is only really going to happen if the people who want it to happen make it their responsibility to make it happen.
Well done. marssociety.org. Robert Zubrin will be back in a moment with Richard C. Hoagland. Thank you, Robert.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com. KFAB, Nebraska's Superstation.